Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and the world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast. Hey all, welcome back to the White Book, where we are on a whopping number, episode 471.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's see, so 72, 73. Oh yeah, so the 475th episode will be a Props and Slops episode, I believe.
Oh, it will. I hadn't even really counted that out or anything, so...
Only because the math was really short was I able to figure that out. Well, I could put it on my fingers.
Good plan. Is it kind of like, do you ever get that month thing taught to you when you were a kid? Do you remember which ones have 30 versus 31 days?
No. One of those things that exists in my brain space. And as long as I don't try to think about it, I know it. But as soon as as soon as you ask me how many days are in March, I'd be like, 30? But I just intuitively know that it's that, it's that kind of knowledge. It just exists somewhere in the back of my cranium.
I got there eventually, but I remember in, grade school age being taught. Now I can't remember the whole rhyme, but it's like 30 days, half November type thing. And you would count them off like on your knuckles. So every raised one was 31 and every sunken one was 30 or February.
I that, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this is the rapturous topic that our listeners tune in every week to check out.
Yeah. There's no Aaron here to take a gigantic steaming dump on my enjoyment of a Marvel Cinematic Universe television show. That means the listener, Sam, will have to just put up with just Will and I this week. So everyone's, as everyone's fourth favorite White Book host.
You're moving up this week, though, Roy.
That's true. By default, I'm everyone's second favorite in this episode. By default,
take them where you can get them. That's what I've learned about life.
That's true, Will. That's true. That's very true. Or you can just live your life like I do, consumed by bitterness.
Well, you know,
resentment.
I suppose that works too.
Oh, yeah.
It's hilarious you mentioned that, because that actually reminds me, I've just been so fried by work that I had even actually forgotten pieces of media I consumed over the last couple of weeks. So I just added a movie to the list.
Great movie. I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
A fine film. It's not what it's free to Disney Plus subscribers in a couple of months. So I'll probably watch it.
Yeah.
Definitely not on the $30 thing, unlike Black Widow, which comes out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I am not literally crossing days off of my calendar until it comes out.
Yeah. No, we did not pay the extra on Disney Plus. I guess we're just going ahead into this film at this point. Sure. I did wind up watching Cruella.
Cruella DeVille. Yeah.
We wound up blocking out some seats on a matinee at Alamo, now that they have reopened and they're just a couple blocks away. They're spacing out seats and stuff still. So it was not bad. It was a good experience. We're both, of course, vaccinated, so I felt felt pretty good about it all. And I've been itching to get like back to see a movie, even a movie like Cruella.
Cruella, Cruella DeVille.
What to say about it?
What isn't there to say? Well, from what I understand, yeah, of this movie,
it's, you know, I'll start by saying, I think in the end, I probably do have to slop it. Yeah, but I will follow that up by saying, if 101 Dalmatians just didn't exist, if it had not already been established that Cruella is this just psychopathic, murderous, dog torturing ball of evil, then this would probably be like a soft prop. Like it's got a great soundtrack. It's got a pretty cool visual style.
I mean, they spent a lot of money on this movie.
So. Yeah. Yo, they definitely did. I mean, almost all of that was probably devoted to licensing the soundtrack. And the rest of it was hiring.
Disney might own it. You never know, though.
They own damn near everything. So I believe that.
They're not Warner Brothers, which has a much bigger, audio imprint than Disney does.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and the rest of the money went to Emma Stone, because I don't think I recognized anybody else. No, Mark Strong. Oh, I also recognize Mark Strong.
Isn't the lady who plays the, like, her mentor is really famous.
Oh.
Her name is escaping me.
Yeah, you're right.
Emma Thompson.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Alan Rickman's wife in Love Actually. I'm trying to think of other movies that Emma Thompson has been in. That's the only one that comes up to my brain.
I generally try to forget that Love Actually exists.
Yeah, I don't know why. I hate that movie. It just came into my brain. It's like a brain disease. let's see. Oh, she was in Sense and Sensibility. She's so famous and done so many movies. She has her own Wikipedia entry for just her movies that she said. Oh, she was the voice of the mom in Brave, right? She's got Disney.
Oh, nice.
Disney.
She's got some bona fides.
Yeah. Oh, was she the original Bridget Jones too? She was in the sequel to Bridget Jones. Oh, right. And she's Sybil Trelawney in the Forgotten Wizard movies.
Oh, frack. I really forgot about that.
Oh, and she's in the 90s, Much Ado About Nothing. Yeah, this lady has done a lot.
Okay.
So I'm glad I eventually got to her. But
well, good. Good. So my jokes then about budget fall flat. Alas.
Oh, I mean, they just spent a lot of money on
this movie. Much like some of this movie. I don't know. It felt really weird. I've already said this, I think, on the show in general, that I'm kind of mystified by the, like, whole hog push over the last, like, decade to just remake everything. Particularly animated into live action. And then now the even more recent push to remake them and try to rehabilitate the villains, because
can't even,
like, I mean, yeah, it's hard to, like, 101 Dalmatians still exists. So I have to, like, assume this is a Disney multiverse thing. This Cruella cannot actually be the same Cruella.
Well, I mean, she's like, what? I mean, Emma Stone is actually, like, our age. She's in her, like, mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
Let's see. And maybe she's 32.
I think she's a little bit younger.
She's 32. You called it. And so that means she's playing a 22-year-old, a teenage to 22-year-old. So, you know, she and Cruella DeVille is, like, there's many years for her to become the evil Cruella DeVille of... I guess not really.
I guess.
Because I guess true. What's her face is young. Like, there's a lot of problems. Like, Al and I recently rewatched 101 Dalmatians.
Oh, yeah.
And the animation is very beautiful. That's the best thing I can say about that movie. that's not true. Like the male lead, the human male lead of that movie, his career has one banger. And so does that movie, which is the Cruella DeVille song, which is literally the only good thing in that whole movie. Instead, it's full of so many gendered tropes. Like, there's so many of them.
I mean, the movie was made in, like, 65 or something.
But, okay, like, okay. So, I can't even with that movie. It's just so... even for... like, I would feel uncomfortable. That was my sister's favorite movie as a kid. Like, favorite movie. She had, like, a stuffed dog version of, like, Spot, one of the puppies. Like, she loved 101 Dalmatians. But I would feel uncomfortable, like, showing that movie to my kid. Like, because it's just so gendered and weird. Like, I'm like, wow.
Now wow. I feel like I need to rewatch it, because I have not seen it since I was probably in, like, single-digit ages.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I was, like, 12. Like my sister, like, we went to the beach and my sister had it on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Like, honest to goodness, since my sister was in single ages, I haven't seen that movie. It was weird.
Yeah.
I've forgotten a cat is a hero, though. That is a benefit for the movie. I've forgotten about that. But there is a heroic cat in that movie. It's one of the animals to help save the puppies.
Nice. Well, bringing it back slightly to the more recent film, I'm not only, like, confused about the remakes, but also this weird origin story villain rehabilitation thing, because it sets up this, like, I don't know, this unending loop, right? Like, I never watched 101 Dalmatians and sat there and was like, oh my God, I have to know, how did Cruella wind up like this? What drove her to this evil? But evidently, Disney thinks that there are a lot of people sitting around wondering that. So they give us this story and conveniently throw this new character, the Baroness, out in front of us, who is just effectively exactly like Cruella. So, like, in another couple of years, do I get the Baroness movie that explains why she's evil? Like, I don't see an end to this. The
answer is structural generational trauma. Yeah. The Baroness inflicts the trauma that was inflicted upon her onto Cruella, who then attempts to inflict it on her roommate, school friend, mm-hmm. Cruella.
Yeah.
What is her school friend's name? Anita, yeah, right. Because she's, I assume, in the movie, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, she is.
Right. So attempts to do that, but of course fails, sort of, thanks to dogs.
Thanks to dogs. Yep. Man, CGI dogs are weird, too.
They are.
There's so much CGI dog in this movie, and I just want to be like, you know, like, real dogs are a thing, right? And a lot of these scenes, like, don't need to be CGI. It's just a dog, like, standing next to somebody, or a small dog being held by someone, right? Like, it's weird. Mm-hmm. There's also some weird, like, physics that go on. Sorry, we're spoiler full cast here. So I
truly cannot imagine someone being upset about spoiling the movie Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
Not Cruella de Vil. Cruella.
Just Cruella.
Cruella.
And I'll come to that in just a moment. There's this weird stuff. I mean, okay, whatever. Some guard Dalmatians, of all things.
Oh my God. What a stupid movie.
Yeah, like, tackle Cruella's mom and knock her over a cliff, right?
That actually happens in the movie. Her mom is actually killed by Dalmatians.
Yes, yes. That is true. And
I totally thought that was people memeing on the internet. Like, I didn't believe it. Like, I was like, there's no way.
Yeah, no, it happens. And the dog that knocks her off, like, you would think if the dog has that kind of momentum, it hits her and the two of them tumble off, right? No. Have you ever seen video or seen a friend? I don't know. We used to do this, like, in, like, middle school gym when they had the wrestling mats on the wall, you know? You just, like, run and fling yourself at the wall and bounce off of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the physics of what happens with this dog. It bounces off of her like I bounced off of a wall in seventh grade. So if she's that stout, how does she go over the wall? I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. And the final other weird thing that I was going to mention about Cruella is also Cruella evidently has no last name for the entire film, even though we're shown a mother, we're shown her in school and stuff. It's very strange. And then a car, they wind up stealing a car, and one of the side characters, one of the thieves, is looking at the plate on it. It was like, oh, hey, look, this car's a devil. And the other thief corrects him. He's like, it's pronounced DeVille. And Cruella overhears it and is like, ooh, I like that.
Oh, my God.
Like, okay, as cheesy as that is.
Do you know what that reminds me of? Another Disney.
Solo?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, it is exactly like that. And you know what? As lame as it is, I'll at least kind of roll with it. Like, that delivery, like, fit the characters and kind of that tone and stuff. But then not 10 minutes later, they repeat that joke where, like, the same thief, like, drives it in and whatever, drives the car in, and Cruella gets out and says something like, oh, you know, I'm Cruella DeVille or something, and he like points at the car and is like, yeah, it says devil, but it's pronounced DeVille. And it's like, why did you need to go back to this? Well, was the writer's room seriously that blocked?
Yes. Or the highly played screenwriters Dana Fox and Tony McNamara. There's a lot of people who worked on this like movie. Like, the thing about Cruella de Vil is she's a really cool look. Like, it's a cool design. It's like the Disney came up with a really cool design.
And the movie's gorgeous, too.
Yeah. And she's a character that is clearly evil. Her whole movie, the original 100, whole point of 101 Dalmatians is to kill 101 puppies and turn them into a coat. Is a very straightforward children's villain. She wants to murder puppies to make a coat.
Kids need nothing more than that. Like, that is as evil as you can make someone to kids.
And the more you think about the source material, the more troublesome the character of Cruella de Vil becomes. There's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot of stereotypes, a lot of deep readings that can be done about Cruella de Vil from a lot of different, a lot of different perspectives. What she didn't need was a jokerized version of her origin story.
Yes. When I first watched this trailer, I thought, oh, this has that grim take. It's almost like you want to be Tim Burton, but make it actually grim rather than kind of whimsical.
This movie, I can imagine, wants to be Tim Burton, but Joker wanted to be Martin Scorsese.
It doesn't go Tim Burton level. It's in that kind of weird realm that's like you can see the influence, but it definitely winds up closer to that Joker realm.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's trying to be. To be honest, here's Roy's hot take of the day about the Cruella de Vil and the Joker. Are characters of about the same level of complexity.
Yes. Like,
she is a fallen aristocrat who wants to murder puppies to make a coat. The Joker is the clown prince of crime. Like, the more you think about these characters, like, the more questions about the source material you should be asking, but not in, like, I'm going to make a Martin Scorsese knockoff movie, or I'm going to make a Tim Burton knockoff movie. It's more of like, what am I doing with my time reading stories about these characters kind of level? Or, oh my God, these people had a lot of cultural baggage when they were coming up with this. There's a lot of weird stereotypes and weird gendered work going on behind the scenes of these characters. Probably should not spend millions of dollars to make a tentpole film about them. All right, but to give them their sophisticated origin stories. All right, whether they are Tim Burtonized in the form of Cruella, or Martin Scorsese-ized in the form of Joker.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I have And anything else really to add at this point? Frankly, I probably went on longer about this film than I should have.
That's fine. It's my fault, partially.
It's fine. I mean, I did try to say up front that, man, I've been so fried with work lately that I haven't done all that much, and it was going to be a fairly short episode. So, hey, welcome to our usual shtick where it winds up longer than we thought.
Yeah, we'll probably speed through some of this stuff pretty quick. Do you want to talk about probably the other big long discussion, although without Aaron here to like literally do some kind of defecation or urination on People's Parade? Did you enjoy the first two episodes of Loki?
I did, and I'm surprised Aaron was willing to bow out of the Loki discussion.
He enjoyed blowing up my enjoyment of Falcon and Winter Soldier so much that he's still like, it keeps him warm at night. I interrupted you.
Oh, that's fine.
Another joke about this.
He's going to be living off of that for years.
Like he does all the time.
Yep. But yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed Loki. We've got two episodes down as of recording this. Unfortunately, due to the way our schedule works out, the first episode dropped right after recording the last episode of Props and Slops. So we didn't get to jump on it right at the beginning. We've lucked out with some of the others. So I'm trying to think. I think I really just kind of have to treat both of them mostly together. And I enjoyed them. I was unprepared, especially in the first episode, for how much Owen Wilson would just steal the show. I mean, like, he's fine. He's not someone I ever have disliked, but he's never been somebody that I've been, like, excited. Oh, shoot. You know, Owen Wilson's going to be in this. Awesome. But something about his, like, bored, sarcastic bureaucrat. Hey, man, this is just my day job. I've been there. I've done that. I've seen everything. Type of personality just played off Loki and the whole absurdity of the situation and the universe so well. I loved it.
Yeah, I enjoyed. I probably taken as a. Together, I enjoyed them probably they're definitely, I'm not supposed to put this. I probably enjoyed the first two episodes of WandaVision more, but WandaVision moved much more slower than this. Yeah. And I appreciate how fast Loki is getting to the point, which is nice.
Or
considering
is it?
I feel like Falcon Winter Soldier would have gone two more episodes. Like, you don't get Zemo until the third hour of it, right? And like, here this episode ends with possibly, I mean, there's so much fighting on the internet whether actually a female variant of Loki, or it's Enchantress, or some combination of the two, or
maybe they're combining them. Like, her powers and the hair color and different stuff all scream Enchantress. Plus, there were some dubbing credits that mentioned her name in Portuguese or something, I think.
Yeah, I think it's in Portuguese. I think it's the Brazil, once again, causing trouble for Disney.
Yeah. I think I'm probably on board with it being Enchantress. Her outfit definitely had kind of like Loki nods, but like to some extent there's a certain aesthetic to all of the Asgardian outfits, and it wasn't just straight up the same as Loki's, so I could see it just being a take on Enchantress's outfit.
I mean, the modern day like Enchantress outfit has like a lot in common, like a decent amount in common with Loki's like look in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's not like extremely difficult, right? And like, I don't think they're gonna go around calling the female variant of Loki Lady Loki, like in the like in the comics. Like,
yeah,
that has a whole different level of like stuff. So they will most likely give her a distinct name to make her like so people can refer to them like easily. Like, there's the Loki we know from all the movies, and then this
who doesn't exist. Variant. He's dead.
That's true.
there's the new Loki we currently have.
It's true, right? So these different variant Lokis. Yeah, I mean, I just think that like it's setting up and paying things off much quicker than the other two Marvel shows.
It seems like it. I'm curious, just before we leave Enchantress behind, because I think this kind of ties in to some of this about payoff and getting to the point faster. Am I the only one that got some sort of vibe that I'm going to call her Enchantress for ease of discussion? Yeah. That Enchantress is not the big bad, so to speak. That she's working for someone else.
No, I think maybe she's working for someone else. I think the TVA are going to end up being the bad guys.
I hope it's not that. I'm going to be so annoyed if that's the only well that Marvel can come up with now is, hey, look, we introduced this authority organization. Hey, look, they're really the villains. Like, if that's the plot of all of these shows, I'm going to go crazy.
I mean, like, S.W.O.R.D. wasn't really the bad guys of Vision. How am I put this? Like, S.W.O.R.D. could have been good or bad. Like, but the TVA, from the moment they're set up, you're like, they're time cops. They're these three space lizards. It is very funny how Loki refers to them as space lizards. Like the TVA itself, like, and all of its tropes scream much more like villainous to me than like S.W.O.R.D., which is just another Marvel, like, you know, it's just like S.H.I.E.L.D. with the same thing. You know what I mean?
S.H.I.E.L.D. but more offensive.
Yes. So like it wouldn't bother me. I guess the other thing is like there's only one other major actor who has not shown up yet, who is confirmed, which is Richard Grant. There's been rumors that he is going to be playing like old Loki, like, and old my Loki.
Just what we need.
Like my bet is that there will be a Loki variant that's the villain, the big villain, but it's not going to be the female Loki.
It's like a league of Lokis.
No, she either is working for him and will eventually team up with Hero Loki. I get, you know, Enchantress will team up with Hero Loki, or she's got her own thing to like screw over the TVA because they did something to her, or, you know, she wants to survive, right?
Eliminated her timeline and somehow she was left over. And
yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And the twist, this is a guess, that old Loki is the timekeepers. So that actually the twist is going to be that Loki did take over the TVA, but it's a different Loki than our Loki. And
they're basically just going to turn Loki into Immortus.
Kang does exist, right?
Yeah. And
so like,
and
I don't think they're going to,
he's being introduced in Ant-Man and the Wasp, right?
He will be in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah. Jonathan Majors plays with Kang. I mean, there's also rumors that he'll show up at the end of this.
That would make sense to be in this. Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to somehow be Immortus because Immortus is a freaking confusing character.
Kang is a confusing character? Or do you mean,
fair.
Nathaniel Richards? Or do you mean,
Iron Lad, or
Egyptian themed one,
which is why they couldn't, they had initially wanted to use Kang in earlier, but they couldn't.
Ramatut,
I think it, the fourth issue of Fantastic Four that he appeared in. Like, I don't think they're going to go to that level extreme. I think that'll
be way too much for a modern.
But I do think the twist is going to be that a Loki variant. Because it's not going to be the three space lizards, right? Like, nobody sees them, right? It's just one of those things. They're setting something up.
I mean,
there's going to be.
It could be
it could be Kang.
It could be a multiple of things. Because in the comics, they are not the only creatures left at the end of time. If I remember correctly, there's one other like alternate timeline in the comics where there's a evil doppelganger mirror universe version of them called the Time Twisters. So I had thought, okay, maybe they'll go that direction. And that's why they're hiding out more and they're not seen. I've also thought maybe they're dead and the rest of the TVA is being kept in the dark. And one person, like possibly that judge whose name I didn't catch.
Judge Renslayer, who in the comics has a connection to Kang.
Oh, really? So, yes. Yeah. So I thought maybe she knows and is trying to cover it up.
Oh, she definitely knows something.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, obviously, right? Like. And that whole, like, Owen Wilson putting his glass down.
Oh, uh-huh.
And there's already... That's going to come back, too.
Like, yeah. What else? Oh, I had another thought. Maybe Kang is going to be one of the timekeepers that has gone rogue and possibly killed the other two.
That could be something, yeah. I wouldn't. That could be there. I have a feeling it's going to be a Loki variant.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. Because, like, that's the extra twist of, like, Loki being, like, I'm going to, you know, trick the TVA and, you know, I'm going to trick everybody to meet the timekeepers, kill them and take their place. That does happen, but with a different, more evil version of Loki than the one that we know and love from our timeline.
Another idea. Mm-hmm. They spent time in the first episode, Mephisto baiting us again, which I'm trying to think if there's any other character in the Marvel Universe that would come to mind that would bother to impersonate Loki for some reason, you know, for some scheme to mess with people, to throw him under the bus, whatever. Mephisto is probably at the top of my list. Plus, Richard Grant would be fantastic as a Mephisto. Plus, it's just cruel. Like, I'm gonna be really negative on Marvel's handling of things, it or Disney, whatever, it's the same thing, if their new gimmick is, hey, we're gonna keep like teasing Mephisto in like multiple shows and it's never gonna actually be him. It's just like cruel to do to your viewers. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, they're like bare. Like, did they really tease Mephisto?
Oh, he straight up like, said like a devil bearing gifts, and then it pans up to the stained glass that is just straight up.
No. Mephisto. I'm talking about in WandaVision. Like, a lot of the WandaVision stuff just came from the fact that people, myself included, like are just really familiar with the source material. There's like a few devil jokes, but like, was it really? Like, no. Well, and it's also the fault, like, I mean, a lot of that Mephisto stuff also comes from a community that I'm a part of, which is the Marvel Spoilers community. Like, there was a heavy leak that got about 75% of the series correct, but said that the villain was Mephisto. And, of course, that didn't happen. So, yeah. I think, and then that, like, the memes about that not happening has spilled out into the broader Marvel fandom. Anyway. I was there. I was reading the Reddit thread when it emerged.
I think I missed that one. I don't think I had joined Marvel Spoilers yet by that point. But I have now, so I'll... I haven't had time to go in and read anything
about Loki.
Well, I mean,
the thing is,
Will,
like, you have to understand, like... I mean, I've been following that community since Infinity War. Mm-hmm. Like, one out of every 100 leaks are correct, but there are correct ones.
Right.
Like, so like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Eternals leak that came out.
I read that one. The one that basically was a synopsis of the entire film.
Yes. That one I wouldn't be surprised. It's very similar to the Infinity War link that did leak, not link, leak that did come out. So, and that was like spot on. But anyway. But I would not be surprised if I just, and this is me not even going off any leak. This is just me guessing. I wouldn't be surprised if a male older variant of Loki ends up being the villain. The female variant is not the final villain. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the third episode, she is not a villain.
I would not at all be surprised by that either. Yeah, I definitely did not get that, like, truly villainous vibe.
Well, she let Loki basically follow her, right? So,
right. Now the question, I suppose, the immediate question that is Loki following her just for himself, or is he following her on behalf of the TVA? I mean, most likely answer some mix of that, but yeah.
Oh, it's definitely a mix. Like, yeah. But like, also, like, one of the things that's interesting is like they already separated Loki from the TVA stuff again, yeah. Which is fast for these Marvel shows, right? Again, we didn't get Zemo until the third episode of Falcon. We didn't get the sword stuff until the fourth, or was it the fifth episode? I think it was the fourth episode of WandaVision. So like, they're moving at a much quicker pace here, which I appreciate. Because it does sometimes feel a little bit that they are spinning their wheels.
Well, I guess we'll see where it goes next. Or is there anything else pertinent we need to hit on Loki?
I would prop it. I think we talked through my main theories, so...
Yeah, I think I would prop it. Oh, I guess, you know, one other very small thing. I do dig the, at least at like the lower kind of local level of the TVA, you know, when you're not looking out the window at the giant crazy space station looking thing. I dig the retro 60s bureaucratic vibe everywhere. It just has that old, stale, ponderous bureaucracy feel, just immediately evokes that for me. So I love that. Plus, Tara Strong voicing, what was the watch's name? Or the clock, the little animated clock thing.
Miss Minutes?
Miss Minutes, yeah, yeah. That was a fun, just little tertiary thing. At least it seems that way at the moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it'll probably come back.
I mean, I think that the Miss Minutes has her own character poster from Disney.
Coming back. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely coming back.
All right.
All right, what's up next?
Well, you've got Younger's final season. That's that show with that lady from the actress from
Lizzie
that
McGuire.
Ballet show, right?
Oh, I don't know. The only person in it that I really knew from anything else is Hilary Duff, formerly known as Lizzie Duff McGuire.
She is on this show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. She's one of the two leads.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sutton Foster. You're right. Yeah. She was in, what was that show that my ex liked a lot? What was it called? She was in. Well, this lady's been in a lot of. She was in an episode of Elementary. Bunheads. Bunheads.
Ooh.
That's that show.
I do not know that one.
It's about gymnastics.
Oh.
Not ballerinas. Gymnastics. And it was done by the Gilmore Girls people. What they did, but from Gilmore Girls got canceled, then they did that show, and then they did that 50s show that everyone loves.
Okay.
Huh. Miss Marple? Whatever. Marple?
Maybe? I have not gotten into that. Let's see. But younger, though, Kristen kind of looped me in on that a few years ago. And the final season has been dropping. I think it ended last week. And for anybody who's not familiar with the concept, I can't recall if I've mentioned it here before, but the first episode basically kicks off with a 40-year-old mother who winds up getting divorced and is stuck starting her life over. She had kind of been the stereotypical, housewife soccer mom sort of thing, and she realizes she doesn't really have anything to start over with, career-wise and kind of further purpose to her life. So she decides to start over. But she can't get hired as a 40-year-old for like starting positions. And she wants to, or she ends up having to pretend that she is much younger, hence the name. I forget what age, maybe 28 or something. Basically a Gen Xer pretending to be a millennial.
Classic.
Yeah. And, hijinks ensue. It's kind of a half hour soap opera type of show, kind of a romance drama type of thing. And yeah, I guess maybe I would put it in like a similar category as Gilmore Girls, honestly. Like, not quite full-on like dramedy, but it's not that funny, but focuses more on the romance. I don't know. It was a fun ride. There's a lot of pretty entertaining stuff, but this last season, I felt they really rushed. I've not gone digging for the full story of, whether it got cut short or whether like they thought they were going to have more time and got told, no, this is going to be the end or what. But it felt like it really rocketed through kind of the end of Eliza is the main character's name. Main relationship. Like it crumbled in the first like episode, I think, then like zipped back to being there, then like with the same other character, then crumbled again in the final episode, and then basically ends with her sort of not quite getting back together with her initial much younger love interest from the first season, but him kind of saying, hey, I'm always there kind of thing. And them kind of, looking like they're going to restart something. And I don't know. Maybe it's just because, back when it was airing, How I Met Your Mother was so like ingrained in my corner of pop culture that like...
Was it? How I Met Your Mother ended a long time ago now, hasn't it?
Oh, it did. It did. But that sort of like loop to like, hey, remember this love interest from the first season? Turns out that's who they were going to be with all along. Like that, and that rush in the like last episode to be like, ha ha, there it was. Like feels really stale to me. And then them doing the same thing in Younger didn't really work for me.
Well, How I Met Your Mother, I think, proved that it doesn't work.
Yeah, probably. Like, so, and they should have had enough time to know that. Like you said, it was a long time ago.
It's closer to 10 years. It's 2014 is when it ended. It's closer to being 10 years old.
Yeah.
Finale than being, having just aired. I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, yeah.
It's difficult to disentangle what my life was going through at the time. When, anyway, How I Met Your Mother proved that if you tell the audience over and over again, you're not going to do something, and that the show is not about this thing, and then it ends up being about this thing, that people are going to feel put out. I think that's something that really these kind of serial television writers should keep more in mind. I mean, there's a lot of things about How I Met Your Mother that have not aged well in the 10 years since it has left the air, and why I will probably never go back and rewatch it. But never say never, because I never thought I would go back and rewatch Parks and Rec, but I have. So, but I'm only doing the early season so far. But
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is probably why it doesn't work. It winds up feeling like you've pulled one over on the viewers, basically. I never feel like that's a good idea. I think I mentioned the same thing when we were watching, was that the final season? Next to final season of Game of Thrones, when Littlefinger got caught and trapped and whatever, and the way that was handled was basically pulling a fast one on the audience rather than characters pulling it on each other. And I guess that's sort of back to the Mephisto thing I was talking about. Yeah, I don't think it's good smart storytelling to tell, to like play the trick, so to speak, on your audience.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, well, what is next for you, sir?
I can speed through these because I think I'm the only one who has watched or is interested in watching either of them. I know Glazer and Carla watched Lucifer, but I'm now 2/3 of the way through the penultimate season of Lucifer. I've been sort of taking it a little bit slow because it hasn't quite grabbed me as much as some of the previous seasons. Largely has to do with the fact that it's back on its bullshit. Which is
define that.
Lucifer is a show that is very much based on the will they or won't they trope between Lucifer and his love interest, which they milk so much in the previous seasons, like to a point of farce. Like by the end of the previous season,
and just double checking, the love interest is the human, right?
The human detective.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The human detective, like, it got to the point of like just complete farce where like they were just inventing increasingly over the top, similar to Bones fell into this trap as well, but didn't have the supernatural elements. So while Bones kept coming up with ridiculous serial killers, like that Edward Snowden one that died and then came back from the dead and then wasn't actually alive. Anyway, to keep Bones and Booth apart, so does Lucifer. And that got tiresome on Bones. And it has gotten equally tiresome on Lucifer, and the show spends about half of the episodes I've watched doing that again. It seems to have pulled away, but they've done this before, and already the episode that we're like, nope, we're going to go in a different direction. We're going to explore these characters in a relationship. I'm already sensing that by the end of this episode, they're going to be like, you know what? Nah, back on our bullshit. That's driving me a little crazy. It's moving towards the finale. Like, there's going to be one more season. And it's setting things up in an interesting way to sort of end this version of the story in a way that I think will be satisfying for the characters, mm-hmm. except for this stupid will they or won't they dynamic. I am a person, of course, who gets tired of the will they or won't they stuff relatively quickly. And Lucifer has milked it for, what, this is the fifth season? So 5 seasons. And the show isn't that good to do it, right? And so when you take the level of, it's not that great of a TV show, it's very enjoyable, I love it, but it's not like structurally great or anything, or doing anything particularly like new or innovative, it doesn't have the weight to carry this will they or won't they stuff, and I'm just tired of it. But the rest of it's been pretty good so far. But just, I'm a little tired of that. But I'll still prop it because it's still enjoyable. I still love the characters. I'm just a little tired of that specific trope. Mare of Easttown. That's the prestige crime show on HBO for this year.
Yeah,
The Outsider was last year.
Had some big problems with the finale, right?
Oh, I haven't gotten to the finale.
The tech problems, I meant.
Yeah, well, people. Yeah, the very ending. I don't feel like satisfied people very much. With who the final killer is, which I technically haven't gotten to yet, but I know who it is. It's good though. It's very, very well acted. The thing I like about it is it moves. It's not procedural. If you view the sort of like detective show genre this prestige detective show genre on two poles. One is like True Detective, and the other is Bosch, right? Bosch owes a lot more to like traditional procedural cop shows, but it's still the acting is better, the writing is better, the plotting is better, you know, the mysteries are pay off better. And then, you know, Twin Peaks, I guess, could even be another example. This True Detective, these like ones that like really play with the formula and have big things to say about humanity. It's much closer to the True Detective stuff, but it keeps it the core mystery is pretty well done. It keeps it very focused on the characters, particularly, of course. Oh my God, why is the lead actress's name escaping me? I know who it is. She's from Titanic and extremely famous.
Why is my brain shut? Kate Winslet.
There we go. Her acting is really, 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 really amazing. It is one of the strongest performances that I've watched in a long time. And it brings a lot of humanity to it. And and I appreciate that it's trying to be, it's sticking its, like, both of its, hands into like a set of tropes and themes that is really difficult, but it's doing so in a really humanistic way that I think doesn't feel exploitive, the ways in which other, you know, crime-based shows could easily fall into dealing with some of these issues. And I think that that's really refreshing. And I'm excited. Like, it's a very intense show. So I kind of can only like watch it in bits and bits of it at a time, but it's very good. I'll be watching the finale and I'll report back to the last couple episodes. Two things stand out though. The guy from American Horror Story who will play Quicksilver, Evan Peters, there we go.
Oh yeah.
He plays a normal person on this show. This is the first time I've ever seen him play a normal person. Like, he's just a normal dude. He has dark hair.
Oh, that's weird.
So. He's just a normal detective character doing normal. He's doing normal person acting. It's weird, but in a good weird. He's a very talent. Like, Evan Peters is very talented. He definitely, if you've watched him in American Horror Story or whatever, he definitely is acting much more normal. And then Guy Pearce is old, or at the very least, they made him up to look really old. He plays a washed up professor writer.
I mean, he's probably not that like. Old in real life, he's maybe like early 50s, right? 53. Okay, yeah.
He looks very dire in this show, which may be the makeup and how they've styled him, but he definitely looks very dire. He's married to Melisandre.
Oh, really? Did not realize that.
It came up when I Wikipedia or when I Googled him. But yeah, high props. For Maribee's Town. Although I'm very excited for the new season of Boston, which comes out on Friday. I will definitely, as soon as work is over. Although we're supposed to have dinner with friends. So probably Saturday then. I'll watch like the whole season in one go.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I got hooked on that show like a couple months ago. And I like sped through the six seasons of it. It's good shit. It hit the, like, it hit my itch. I mean, I'll call myself out. Like, it's me on my bullshit, because I'm a sucker for these cop shows, which I shouldn't be. Like, I know they're propaganda. Like, I am capable of, like, internalizing this, or I'm capable of expressing it, but not internalizing it. It's something I could say that Aaron's not here to yell at me. for doing this, but anyway. Do you want to talk about Downton Abbey rewatching, or do you want me to talk about Parks and Rec?
Yeah, I'll flip back over to Downton Abbey. I mean, I don't think I have a lot really to say other than I will reprop it. It's part of, I guess, what I kind of had a hard time even recalling that I've been watching. It's just nice, fluffy, mindless rewatch. I mean, I'm reinvested in the characters again and all that jazz. But just simple. I don't have to expend much on it. It's been a nice way to veg out again and dip my toes back into a more opulent era, shall we say. What a shame it only ran for 3 seasons, though. What a shame.
Mm, yeah. Not a fan of the later seasons.
I mean, they're fine. And we're actually on season 4 now, actually. But it is rough that basically 2 of my favorite characters both perish in season 3.
Yeah, 2 of the better characters in the show. Although I liked Matthew a little bit less when my wife and I loved Matthew when I first watched the show, but I liked him a little less when I rewatched the first 2 seasons up to the death of the youngest daughter with my wife in the winter. The episode where she dies is just was too much for both of us. We're like, you know what? We came for this for some escapism and making fun of the British aristos and people who love the British ruling class. So like there's like just lots of jokes. But now this intense real thing about this lady dying in childbirth and her dad basically being responsible for it and her mom watching her die. That's way too much.
It's very intense. The tone does not fit the rest of the series at all. It's
new. No.
Yeah. No. So there we go. That's probably all I have to say about Downton at the moment.
Yeah.
I think you're working on a rewatch as well.
I am. Parks and Rec. So I went looking for a really good history themed episode of a television show. I show my kids for the last day of school. And we had already done the Lisa episode of The Simpsons where she uncovers what Jebediah Springfield did in the past, which is a banger of a Simpsons episode. One of the best of all time. Always, and you know, with all that's going on in the news right now, still relevant. Did Lisa make the right choice at the end of the episode? Great reflection question for students. Anyway, we already had done that earlier in the season when we did a lesson about Columbus Day and historical memory. And I was searching around for any other show that like was kid appropriate, you know, family friendly-ish, so I wouldn't get in trouble with the principals. I couldn't find one, but I was like, there has to be a Parks and Rec episode. Like, I feel like I remember one. And I did a bunch of, like, Googling about Parks and Rec and reading about episode summaries. I'm like, none of them really are fitting my needs here. But what that did is it, like, reminded me about how much I loved Parks and Recreation. Because it has been about 5 years since I watched an episode. Maybe a little longer. Like, when the show ended... And you feel this. We just got to the season where Leslie is running for office. So that's the 4th season? Yeah, 4th season. So Ben has only been around for 2 seasons. It's a product of its time. It's still really funny. Some of the things in it have not aged well. Some of the sources of humor have not aged well 10 years later. And it does feel like court propaganda of the Obama era. Like, it's a very optimistic, very naive about America and American politics and all kinds of stuff. That's like kind of sitting, I'm very uncomfortable, you know, as I sit here in June. Like, it's a political show that is like kind of weirdly apolitical. But it's still very funny and very charming. And the character relationships are, like, so lovable.
Calling it a political show even is, I feel, kind of strong. It takes place with characters that have political jobs, but there's very little about, like, anyone's actual politics. Not non-existent, but, like, it's more the character interactions.
Leslie gets more explicitly political as the show, like, Leslie's worldview, as they like figure out who Leslie is, like her worldview and the like, there's political implications behind a lot of it, right? Okay. And like the fact that it tries to do a show that is about people who are in government office, and Leslie literally wins an election twice, right? She gets twice in the main continuity of the show, and then like in the future she wins a bunch of stuff, right? But she gets elected to city council twice on the show, right? So you have a person who runs for office twice in the show, and there's a lot of weird stuff the more you think about Parks and Rec, seeing him in 2016. And a lot of that is later in the show. I love a lot about it. But it feels weird sometimes. It feels weird sometimes, I guess. But I do love it. We watched a lot of it. I mean, it's only been like a week, and we're already in the fourth season. I mean, to be fair, they're half-hour episodes, so you like burn through them.
Oh, but, yeah.
I mean, like,
I mean, less than that without commercials now.
Yeah. So, well, like 20 minutes. You have to watch on Peacock. And while we have the medium Peacock, so we have access to every, because I guess since we had Comcast at the time, you get, I don't know, maybe Comcast is listening right now, but they haven't figured out we're not Comcast subscribers anymore. So we still have, like, we have access to all the stuff on Peacock, okay, but we have to watch ads. So, like, I'm not going to pay yet again another service to, you know, get it ad free, right?
Yeah.
I'll put up with the same Verizon ad over and over and over again.
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't mind streaming ads that much, especially at like the frequency that Peacock does them. Like, I feel like that is not excessive.
No,
it's just that they keep playing the same ones. Like, give me some friggin' variety.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, actually, the worst is IMDb TV, or anytime you watch an added movie or TV show on Amazon Prime.
Uh-huh.
They have so many commercials, and it's the same commercial over and over again. And yeah, it's really bad.
I don't think I've ever checked that out before, so maybe I will stay away from that.
Amazon has been weirdly shifting stuff onto IMDb TV from Amazon Prime.
Do they?
Yes, yeah.
Oh,
because it's still free on Amazon Prime, but it in the sense that you can watch it, but you don't get the ad-free experience without paying for the IMDb subscription. So tricky, Jeff Bezos. That's how his wife has given away more. Ex-wife, excuse me, has given away more money than any other person in the last 20 years, but she actually has more money at the end of it.
Whee!
That's how that happens. I mean, your banker will explain. You can explain that to me off air, how that works.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of a weird week for props and slops, I guess. Feel like I have not done that much new. It seems like you've also been rewatching. So maybe we're going to have to really double down for next time and have something new to throw in the mix.
Yeah, by next time, I mean, school will be out by then, and I have a long list of things that I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
So
plus, we'll probably have Aaron with us to berate us about enjoying Loki.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true. Yeah. One quick thing before we head out. I've talked about this a few times on the show, but the indie role-playing game Wildermyth, which was in early access, or Wildermyth, or whatever, however you want to, Wildermyth, or however you want to pronounce it, it went into full release. It's no longer an early access game. You should play it. It's very good. And you're supporting a nice little indie role-playing game company, and the full release is immensely charming. They fixed some things, and they launched with a brand new campaign. So I'm playing it again. I had beaten all the campaigns previously that were in early access, but there was a new one that came with the full release, and I've been enjoying it a lot.
Awesome. Well, I may have to check that out. But the gaming time I'm getting is still going to Mass Effect Legendary Edition. So
I'm at the point where if I play Mass Effect Legendary Edition, I will just binge my way to the ending, and it'll be all I do. So I'm waiting for the school year to end before I do that, and then I'm just gonna knock it out.
Gonna try to space it out a little bit and enjoy it a little more.
Yeah, also the emotional impact.
Mm-hmm.
That ending, oof.
Provided you get the right ending. I'm sure we've discussed this before, but which did you choose on your first playthrough?
Synthesis?
Ah, yes, that's right. You did say that.
But, I mean, like it feels like the game is strong-arming you into that. I'm going to do my best to pick Destroy this time. but we'll see if like how I'm feeling. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I can't blow up Eevee. Like,
I mean, don't forget refuse is also technically an option.
You mean they keep coming and that's even worse. That's
yeah, like, exactly.
Like, I don't know why anyone would pick.
Everyone dies and the Reapers win. Congratulations.
It's like, cool. You hated the ending so much. Why don't you cut your nose off to spite your face?
Yeah. Did I ever tell you before that on my first playthrough, I made that choice inadvertently? That's the first choice I ever made.
Pretty funny.
Because it kicks you out of the dialogue and your character's just standing there in the Citadel and like there's no timer or like, you know, flashing lights and music that makes it seem like, oh my God, I've got to run right now. So I was like, okay, I'm like any other random like mission or something, like nothing happens right now unless I walk around and go do it. So I set my controller down and went to the kitchen to like get a drink or something and then come back to discover, oh Lord, everything's on fire.
Yeah. I beat the original Mass Effect in less than Mass Effect 3, excuse me, in less than 5 days. So I did not have the extended ending.
Gotcha.
So I didn't even like, I didn't even have the ending where you like you actually, it's actually clear how your crew escapes.
Mm-hmm.
So because the original ending, which like I'm one of those people who, like, I think Mass Effect, I mean, Aaron loves to give me a hard time about this, even though he's never played a Mass Effect game and never will in his life. Like, I'm a believer that Mass Effect 3 is the best Mass Effect game. I never hated the ending. Like, I wasn't the biggest fan of the three-color ending. I feel like the best ending was that moment where Shepard and Anderson are dying together after they defeat the Elusive Man and the Reapers are blowing up. Like, if that had been the ending, I would have been very satisfied. Right? Shepard saved the universe. He's with Anderson, the person he was with at the beginning, or she, excuse me. They were just together. They defeated, you know, Shepard's, all of Shepard's sacrifices, all of the crew sacrifices pay off in this moment. Boom. They didn't decide to go with that. There was another 20 minutes, very controversial 20 minutes. But, you know, at the end of the day, it didn't mean much for me, but a lot of it didn't make sense. Particularly like how your crew escaped in the original version, but they fixed that with the extended ending. And they did a good job fixing it. I think overall, I am excited to see the endings, but wow, does that last 2 hours just kick the crap out of you? And yeah, I mean, I cried the first time I beat Mass Effect 3.
It was intense. It was really, really intense. Which is probably how Mass Effect Andromeda was doomed in some ways, no matter what. But I'm afraid if we start down this path, there will be no return.
Yes, I could talk about the Mass Effect series for literally hours. Oh, but that would definitely put us in the danger zone.
Indeed. Speaking with one last danger zone item, actually, to send us out, I just saw that Sega has partnered with Minecraft to bring Sonic the Hedgehog to Minecraft.
No. I reject that, Will.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Will.
Oh! What happened?
Shit on me, Jesus Christ.